All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us here in the second segment. We are speaking with Christopher Jon Bjerknes about the myth of Einstein and his, theoretical trap, the people who have helped to create this, from the media to the establishment to the scientific and academic establishment as well. There's a whole lot that we've gone through here now. Absolutely fascinating. It's very interesting to hear about this. And where I'd like to begin now in the second segment here, Christopher, is really to talk more about Einstein's political aspirations, how he was instrumental in aiding the Zionist objective, and in terms of how him as being launched onto the scene helped to kind of propel the movement. Tell us a bit about his, I guess, personal opinions, as far as you know, when it came to Zionism.
Well, he was caught up in the turmoil of the First World War. And one of the reasons why we had a First World War was to break apart the Ottoman Empire and free up Palestine for Jewish occupation. Another was to break apart the empires which existed in Europe and to fuse them all into a pan-European empire and to create perpetual wars among these empires. And Einstein was born into and was initially a citizen of the German Empire. And in the middle of World War I, he was very treasonous to the German people. And in his correspondence, he talked about how he hated the Germans and hoped that they would lose the war. And he spoke in his correspondence of the quote-unquote horrid Europeans and how the world could only be improved if Europeans were replaced by Chinese. And Einstein... It's true. It's horrific. It's true. And it reflects, since Einstein was a habitual plagiarist and since Einstein's ideas were formulated by others, it reflects the fact that he was talking to very powerful Jews who told him that this would be the future. And one of the Jews who was his strong political mentor in formulating his Zionist and Bolshevist aspirations was a man named Georg Nikolai, whose original name was Levenstein. And Georg Nikolai was also a traitor against the German Empire in the midst of the war. And he wrote a book called The Biology of War. And he wrote that to try to weaken the Germans' will to fight. And he said quite correctly that modern warfare was weakening the genetics of modern European people by sending soldiers off to fight in the flower of their youth, and that the best, the strongest, and the bravest were being slaughtered by modern technology, and that in ancient warfare, it was a conquest of survival of the fittest, but that technology had reached a point where mass destruction was being perpetrated on whole peoples, and that it was destroying the best people and not producing a natural selection of the fittest, but of the worst. And in that book, he stated that the European race was inferior to the Chinese and Mongoloid race, and therefore the Chinese and the Mongoloid race have the moral justification and the logical imperative to exterminate the European race. And when you put that idea together with the idea that Einstein was endorsing those ideas, it's very clear that the Jews want to exterminate the European race. And we know that from a future work by a man named Richard Coudenhove Kalergi, who is the father of the European Union and who was funded by the Jewish bankers Rothschild and Warburg. Now, this man wrote a book called Praktischer Idealismus in 1925. In which he stated that the Jews are a master race and that the Jews can only assume the throne of rule over the world by weakening the European race, and that the means to weakening the European race would be to dissolve all the European nations, destroy all their cultural heritage and their national traditions, and replace that with the European Union, and then to invite in Africans, Middle Easterners, and Asians to dilute the blood of Europeans through miscegenation to the point where they became a degenerate mixed race. And then at that point, these people would no longer have any sense of nationhood. And the ancient Jewish messianic prophecies of world rule out of Jerusalem, with Jews maintaining their nationhood and their national status and greatly increasing its influence, while concurrently destroying the national status and national influence of every other nation on earth, it would fulfill the Jewish messianic prophecies that the Jews could then rule the world and right the wrongs that history had perpetrated against the Jews. And this was completely in line with what Nicolai had written in 1917 and has manifested itself recently with the invasion of immigrants from Africa, from the Middle East, and from Asia into Europe, America, and Australia. And they are deliberately setting about to genocide the white race and destroy all sense of nationhood and of national heritage and national culture in each of our nations.
You know, we've brought up Count Richard Nicholas Coudenhove-Kalergi, you know, quite a few times on the program. It's one of these very interesting and bizarre characters, both in terms of his wickedness, but also in terms of his dedication, which I find somewhat odd, to be honest. As far as we know, he was not Jewish himself. He did have
He was mixed race. He was part Japanese and part
right.
Dutch, I think.
Exactly. I wonder if that was at the root of it or something, or why he, because obviously, as you said, in his book, Practical Idealism, and in some of his other writings as well, he talked about the moral superiority, right, of the Jewish people as a kind of he called it Europe's spiritual leader race, I believe, Führerrasse or something of a word he used. And it's quite interesting that why he went down this road. I've been trying to find some more information about his drives and his motivations, and it's true as what you said that he, you know, he was behind what's called a pan-European movement. It was largely set up together with Otto von Habsburg at the time. And it was, as you said, of course, it was funded by Warburgs and Rothschilds and everything else. But he managed to, you know, propose the symbol of Europe, the anthem and all these kinds of things together with Otto von Habsburg. And those things are actually things that have come into fruition. They even have something called the Coudenhove-Kalergi prize today that actually is awarded to a lot of the European politicians.
I was just going to mention that in the European Union itself, he is celebrated as the founder of the European Union. And Nick Griffin gave a speech in which he brought out the fact that this man proposed the idea of genociding the white race, and that is the purpose of the European Union, and it is taking place. And Griffin was booed down and called a racist when he just simply pointed out the facts.
Yeah, you read the quote by the man. It's remarkable. Let me actually read. I mean, I think many of our audience here will be aware of it, but let me read it again so you guys can hear what he actually said. It's important. So again, this is in the English translation of Practical Idealism. It says, "The man of the future will be a mongrel. Today's races and classes will disappear, owing to the disappearance of space, time, and prejudice. The Eurasian Negroid race of the future, similar in its outward appearance to the ancient Egyptians, will replace the diversity of peoples with a diversity of individuals." Do you think it's his own maybe confused state, for the lack of a better word, that is at the driving force behind this? Or why did he team up, if you will, with other people that shared his common goal on this?
I think that he admired Jews and he was caught up among Jews. And Jews were discussing all of these things, and it became the center of his consciousness. He was influenced by them. That's what it is. And what he's describing is what is described in the Old Testament, undoing the work of the Tower of Babel and destroying all of the nations so that they can then be judged in Jerusalem by the Jewish king and be exterminated. The Jews believe that non-Jews have the seed of the devil in their genetic structure, which was imparted by the serpent in the Garden of Eden into Eve. And this is told in the Talmud and in the Kabbalah. and that the reason why the world is so dysfunctional and so evil is because Gentiles exist and carry with them this seed of evil, and that the only way to undo this evil is to eliminate the Gentiles. And the Old Testament has numerous passages in which it states that the Jews will rule over and destroy all of the nations while preserving their own nation, and that they will rule the world from Jerusalem in a period of peace. And a lot of people get sucked into this. Isaac Newton was another person who, long before Coudenhove Kalergi, said that the Jews should destroy Europeans, exterminate the white race in fire and flame, so that the Jews can then assume their natural throne over the earth and bring God back to the earth. Isaac Newton was a Zionist who proposed the very same idea of destroying Europeans that Coudenhove Kalergi would. And Isaac Newton was one of countless pseudo-Christian Kabbalists, highly influential people who published these very same things, which eventually produced the Christian Zionist movement in America, where Christian Zionists believe that if they can provoke a nuclear world war, that all of the Gentiles will be destroyed, but the good ones will be raptured up into heaven and then will return in the messianic era. And they're trying to push this. They're trying to push a nuclear war with Russia to fulfill these prophecies. And I think we make a mistake when we assume that intelligent people can't fall victim to these mythologies. And we make a mistake when we assume that Jews are smarter than everyone else and would never do anything this horrific because they're not as silly as these goggly-eyed Christian Zionists. But I think that people fall victim to these things, and when they are surrounded by Jews who are continually talking about these things, they start to assume that these things are natural, normal, and good. And I think that's what happened to Coudenhove Kalergi. He was simply immersed in it, absorbed it, and then promulgated it.
Yeah, you know, what's fascinating here, too, for those that don't know or can't recall, the European Parliament building in Strasbourg, obviously, it basically symbolizes an unfinished building, right? It evokes the idea that the Tower of Babel is being built. It actually looks somewhat similar to a painting that Peter Bruegel the Elder actually did. I forget exactly what year he did that, but it's remarkable how similar those two buildings are. There's even actually older pamphlets released, I think it's the 70s or maybe early 80s, that shows this very building, like the building of the tower, and they release it in unison with a plaque or whatever that's called, is on it. It said, "Europe, many tongues, one voice," kind of evoking this idea of a, well, obviously it's a biblical mythological narrative that's being inserted into all of this, isn't it?
Yes, and in the Bible it specifies that in the end times there will be only one language, one tongue.
Right, yeah.
And one God. And I think one of the principles I would like to convey to your audience is the idea that the Jews believe in the idea of as above, so below. And they feel that there are many gods. They are actually not monotheists. And they think that each individual creature is represented by an angel in the heavens, and that each nation is represented by its national god. And they think that by converting Gentiles to Jewish religions, they kill off their national protective gods in the heavens. And that by killing off their national protective gods in the heavens, as above, so below, they will kill off and exterminate the people themselves. And you'll see that reflective in a lot of what they do. And by eliminating people's languages and their protective national spirits, they are eliminating their supernatural protections and their connections with their own heritage to the point where people become malleable to be reformed into whatever it is that the Jews want to form them into. And what the Jews form them into after they have abandoned their indigenous national heritage is adopting the Jewish national heritage, which is one in which Jews dominate the world and are worshipped as a master race, and all other races are taught that it is evil to preserve themselves and that it is goodness for them to mix with one another so that they can harbor no animosity towards each other. And part of the whole process of creating the world wars was to create wars that were so horrible that people would clamor for peace. And then the Jews proposed the idea that the only way to ultimately achieve peace, the peace of Isaiah, is to destroy all nations so that there are no warring factions. And then now that they are being successful in destroying nations, they want to destroy all races, all languages. And they keep ratcheting it up to the point where nothing exists but that which they create as being beneficial to them.
So this is, do you think this is really a messianic Jewish prophecy that needs to play out here, or
when you say needs to play out, I think you're falling into their trap. They themselves decided with Moses Hess and with the Rothschilds that they would be their own Messiah, mm-hmm. and that they would no longer wait. They had waited almost 2,000 years for God to intervene in the works of men and bring about the messianic prophecies. And Moses Hess redirected that into the idea that the Bible had been created by the Jews' racial instincts, that each people has racial instincts which manifest themselves in their religions and in their prophetic writings, and that the Jews had done this. And therefore, it was incumbent upon the Jewish people to be its own Messiah. And that is when you really started to see events get horrific in Europe, is when Moses Hess inspired Karl Marx to make Jewish messianic prophecies into political movements. And the two political movements that spawned, which generated so much bloodshed in the 20th century, were Zionism and Bolshevism. Zionism was Jewish messianic prophecy made real for the Gentiles, where they would destroy their own governments in order to allow room for the Jews to rule over them. And Zionism was the Jewish messianic prophecy that the Jews would take over the covenant land of Palestine and the land from the Nile to the Euphrates for themselves as the seat of world government to rule over and eventually exterminate all the Gentiles. Those two movements, Bolshevism and Zionism, were made to appear to be in conflict, but they were forces working for the fulfillment of Jewish messianic prophecy.
So it's a really brilliant long-term plan, or do you think it's more that this is how things have, they've played with the things that have been, to a certain extent, both handed to them and what they've been able to create and adapted to the circumstances, and here we are today, right, on the path towards that goal, because it's not predicated on the fact that everything that they have set out to do was going according to plan, right? If you see what I'm saying, that they've adapted as much as they can to the circumstances to basically win over us, right?
They adapted to circumstances and they developed the means. Technology has provided them with the means that they lacked in prior epochs to fulfill their messianic prophecies themselves. Of course, there could be no supernatural intervention to manifest these horrific things. But eventually, the Gentiles provided the Jews with the means to destroy them. They provided the psychological means, the technological apparatus, and the religious means, because Gentiles adopted Mohammedism and Christianity, which themselves aspire to the same messianic prophecies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's horrible bloodshed. And look at what we are in terms of that right now in Europe, and with the invasion, with the rise of Islam in Europe. And, you know, again, it's not the first time we're seeing this, of course. It's reminiscent of it holds echoes of history, but the fact is it's still a bit of a different, it's come in a different way. We have partially allowed this to happen. Yes, there are people that are responsible for pushing this upon us, of course, but we've also so far more or less gone along with this, right? We haven't set up a proper opposition to what's happening. Do you think that this is going to be a war at some point, civil war in Europe between Islamic forces and and Christian and atheist Europeans, and then on the far side of this, you have a third component that is largely have instigated this to come about.
I think it will be a little bit more dynamic than that. And I think that people ought to understand that the Jews have a much higher regard for Islam and created Islam to destroy Christianity. The Jews have 613 laws as defined by Maimonides, whom they call Rambam. And they are obliged to follow those. And they say that Gentiles are lucky and only have 7 laws, which they call the Noahide laws. And Islam conforms to those 7 Noahide laws. And in Jewish history, they call their golden period the period in which they lived in the Ottoman Empire, and even before that, when they lived among the Moors and in Islamic culture. Mm-hmm. They considered that their golden age. So the mistake that Christians make is to believe that the Jews feel that Christianity is their guardian, and that the Jews therefore want to protect Christianity. The Jews, in fact, want to destroy Christianity and want to make Islam the predominant world religion because it conforms to the Noahide laws. It is strictly monotheistic, and Christians worship a trinity. And the Jews believe that the saints and Jesus himself is a forbidden icon and an idol, and that Christians worship idols, and therefore Christians all have to be beheaded. So Europeans ought to be aware that signing on to Christianity will not protect you from the Jews. The Jews want the Muslims to destroy you and overwhelm your religion. Now, in terms of a civil war, I think that what is being set up is that there are Bolshevik forces out of Russia which are utilizing Muslims, especially Chechens, to provide opposition to the invasion itself. And it is a Bolshevik, Angela Merkel, and it is Bolsheviks in Sweden and Bolsheviks in England who are sponsoring the invasion. And Bolsheviks have always wanted Asians, Middle Easterns, and Africans to invade Europe and rape European women and destroy the national spirit and racial pride of Europeans. And there was a committee formed in the Soviet Union during World War II called the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee, which has morphed into the Antifa. And this Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee put out leaflets among Soviet soldiers telling them to go into Germany and kill all the Germans and rape every single German woman. And they did. They went in, and in all the areas that the Soviets occupied, they raped every woman from the smallest children to the oldest ladies that they could lay hands on. And I think that this invasion of Europe is setting up a spread of a new Soviet Union, which will be headed by Russia. And Russia was always heavily under the control of the Jews. And they want there to be civil wars. So I think that the KGB is behind groups like Pegida and other groups that are fomenting civil unrest in Europe as a countermeasure to what the Bolsheviks did through Angela Merkel and others to bring the invaders in. So they are providing and financing both sides of this struggle to drive Europe into civil war. And they are very powerful forces, so I would assume that they are going to become successful. But the only counterbalance to that could potentially be in Donald Trump establishing a precedent of a white people standing up for its heritage and fighting back against this invasion. And if Trump can then provide a stabilizing influence as opposed to a revolutionary influence, which is what the KGB is doing in Europe, then Europe can stabilize itself and get these invaders out in an orderly and humane fashion. And I hope that that is what happens. Because if Europe falls into civil war, what they're going to do is they're going to have the anti-invasion forces dismantle NATO, which is what Vladimir Putin and Alexander Dugin are doing and why they finance people like the Le Pens to run for office. Because they want the pro-NATO forces to invite in an invasion and then the anti-NATO forces to be the opposition to that so that they can dismantle NATO so that when these civil wars break out, there will be no forces of defense from the Bolsheviks, from Russia and China to come running into Europe and completely take it over. And I think their ultimate goal is to exterminate the white race in Europe and replace it with Chinese. Chinese have the largest population of any race on Earth. And because of the musings of people like Einstein and like Georg Nikolai, I believe that that is what they're ultimately after, to get rid of whites through miscegenation and then through extermination. And the Bolsheviks showed, through their whole history that they would always target the intelligentsia and try to create a eugenics program that would weaken the racial characteristics of whites, both by mixing them with what they consider to be inferior races and by killing off the best breeding stock of the white race.
Well, that's certainly happened throughout the many civil wars in Europe, the detrimental world wars.
Well, have you noticed have you noticed that the communists tend to create civil wars that become perpetual? You have North Korea and South Korea. You had North Vietnam and you had South Vietnam. You have mainland China and you have Taiwan.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they keep them going. They
you had East Germany, East Germany and West Germany. And it was Jewish forces that were behind the civil war in the United States. So they are very clever at pitting a people against itself to consume itself, and not only to consume itself, but to consume its best citizens first.
Yeah. Jeez. I mean, there's so many things here that we can discuss in detail of what you just mentioned. A lot of interesting ideas. But I think one of the main things here to discuss a bit more about is in some regards, how open many people are allowed to be on this front. We've spoken about many of these promoters many times, but it's always good to run through some of them. Of course, we have Kalergi, as you mentioned, part of this international guard that kind of sets the precedence in the early days of openly talking about it. But we have Wesley Clark, who also was Jewish, that spoke earlier during the Balkan Wars about how the idea of nationalism and the idea of these homogenous countries at that time is over. You've had professors
promoting the invasion of Islam, the supremacy of Islam in Southern Europe with Albania and with Kosovo.
Right. Yeah, the support, suppressing Serbians, right, Christians, and then supporting the Bosnians and making sure that. And again, it's these scenarios when they arise. It's always that. They claim, well, here's an aggressor and we have to protect the people from this evil aggressor. It was like, well, wait a minute. What was like Milosevic reacting to? What was he, why was he doing what he was doing, right? There's a lot of evidence pointing to the fact that there was people being slaughtered that comes through religious conflict, and he was just simply lashing out, and he wasn't this wicked, evil, Hitlerian dictator that they like to point him out to be. So there's a lot more behind the surface here, I think.
Well, the whole formation of Yugoslavia went against the nationhood of Croatia, Slovenia, Montenegro, Kosovo, Serbia, to create a multicultural society, borderless society. It was in itself sort of a pan-European mini-union of antagonistic forces, and it was artificial. And Tito held it together for a very long time. But when it split, the ancient antagonisms manifested themselves again.
Yeah.
And we took sides, and what we took sides against were the Christians and in favor of the Muslims.
Yeah, very interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
It's bizarre. And of course...
And before that, they suffered for hundreds of years under the Ottoman Empire and maintained
them. Oh, sure. Yeah.
So they had developed both the racial stock and the traditions of maintaining themselves under the oppression of an overarching empire. So they were strong, and they had to be crushed, just as the Japanese now are being destroyed because they have ancient national traditions to preserve themselves and prevent immigration. And there are now strong communists and internationalizing forces in Japan at their weakest moment.
That's right. Yep, that's right. Yeah, I mean, they can keep the lid on it for a while. They can adopt a kind of a communist dictatorship that keep things in check, but basically for a while. But as you say, as soon as this releases, or as soon as there's you know, democracy or liberal forces coming in, it's a recipe for disaster. And you know, again, since Europe already is so liberalized, we're seeing it immediately right out the gate. Some of these people are not even placed and housed properly yet before they're like beginning to lash out and, you know, throw stones at cops. And, you know, many of them are raping and many of them are just, you know, it's a recipe for disaster. And you still have forces within the European population that are openly advocating and pushing for it and think it's going to be the greatest thing ever. It's disaster, Christopher.
It is disaster, and you were primed for it. I have young children at my old age, and when I watch some of the programs that come out of Sweden, you always see the young white male as being goofy, as being a bully, as being stupid, and then the white female is a little bit better and is always the instructor instructing the white male how to behave, and then the superior one is the wise old foreigner, usually with brown skin, who is the wise, gentle, cultured, sophisticated leader of everything. Yeah. And I see that again and again in children programming. And they in America here, they try to teach our kids Spanish and how to play with kids who aren't white.
Yep.
And so people have the expectancy that when these brown-skinned foreign people come into the nation, they will be these gentle, wise, helpful, kind people. And it is not the reality. The reality is in America, we import the worst of the Mexican population and the Asian population. And in Europe, you are getting floods of the worst of the young males of the populations of these other cultures. Now, there is high culture in many of these nations, but in many of these nations, there is not. And you are essentially dealing with savage people coming from savage cultures. And they cannot incorporate into the high culture of Europe and benefit it. It is counter-scientific to expect that they will. Science says that North Europeans have very high IQs and have stable personalities, which have evolved over thousands of years into stable societies. That is what science shows, and we have a right to look to science as evidence that what is taking place is malevolent and is designed to destroy all the good, not to create a greater good.
Yeah, it's beyond remarkable. It's just unfathomable. I don't know why it's happening. I think you're right, though, when you say that the perception is that somehow this is going to be like, it's like a big cuddly brown teddy bear, right? That you let into your home. And despite all this, there's countless of stories of you know, women who are letting them into their families and they end up, you know, molesting them or raping them or attacking their children and stuff like that.
That's one half of it. What you described is one half of it, that it's this big cuddly teddy bear who's going to make their lives better. The other half of it is that they are the evil whites who have colonialized and oppressed all these people and caused all the evil in the world. The media is constantly attacking white people, especially the leading class of white males, as if they are evil, evil by nature, evil by race, and evil by history. And that these people are doing a good thing by committing suicide and destroying themselves for the benefit of a greater good. And I think that was one of the horrific things that Christianity has done to the white mind, is replace the goodness of race with the goodness of a spiritual world, and that there is a higher court who is judging people. And people feel that they will be judged in this higher court by sacrificing themselves as being good, by being in opposition to their own race, in opposition to their own nation, in opposition to their own heritage, and in opposition to their own territory. They feel that by inviting in their enemies, that they will then be judged by the higher court to be superior and will obtain eternal life in a heavenly world.
Right, exactly. It's a religious sense of salvation, a kind of a purging of the original sin of whiteness that can only take place in adoption, or, you know, allowing migrants into your country or something. That it's a sin that has to be cleansed. We have to be cleansed of it, and this is the only way it can take place. Right. So even I think that's also why there is a willingness to obviously look in the opposite direction, right? Because I was...
cover up the horrendous reality of what it is. Because
right,
once
right.
you break the illusion, you get people thinking logically. And when people think logically, even if they still accept the idea that there is a higher court, they will then say that this higher court is going to judge these savages harshly. And that it is these people who deserve damnation and not them. That it is these people who are evil. And hey, maybe it will occur to them that their ancestors weren't so stupid when they kept these savages separate from themselves, when they maintained their own high culture and said that we don't want these other people corrupting us. Maybe their ancestors had a point. And maybe it is these people who are bad and should be kept away from their children and away from their women. And even if these people aren't bad, maybe there's something good about themselves that their racial instincts should cause them to preserve. So when the illusion that has been created by media and Jewish educational institutions is broken, then we have an opportunity to get people thinking about themselves again and admiring their ancestors instead of hating them, and thereby admiring themselves instead of seeking to commit suicide to obtain salvation. And I think you hit the nail on the head. They see themselves as the new Christian martyrs, and they are throwing themselves to the lions of a foreign invasion.
Yeah. I mean, I wish it wasn't so, right? I mean, and yes, not everyone is a bad person. Not everyone is a rapist, but let's face the reality of what has happened, what we can observe so far. The willingness to play Russian roulette effectively with the future of our children and civilization, European Western civilization, that there's no weighing the supposed benefits of this against what we're actually you're seeing taking place. I mean, the conditions at some of these, you know, camps, asylum homes, and it's beyond horrible. They're not only turning on the native population, they're turning on themselves. There are children and old women in some of these places that are getting raped as well. And
they're bringing it with them. They're bringing it from
right.
Pakistan. Yeah. They're bringing it from Senegal, from the most horrific places. You are inviting these people in to come and take what you have. I don't understand it. I don't understand why people would do that. Why give away what your ancestors worked so hard to defend and build?
Yeah.
And the reason is brainwashing. They are psychotic in their thinking.
To a certain extent, I think that in some of the countries that they come from, there are very harsh punishments for some of these behaviors, and they would never do it in their own countries. But all the inhibitions are let go once they come into ours, liberalized, soft, even the culture shock of how women dress. Many of these things are an invitation to behave in this way, right? It's kind of like what's going on in some of these bathhouses. I don't know what the hell it is with these bathhouses, but it keeps coming out these stories of you know, some of these people are, they're defecating on the side of the pool, they're molesting children, they're masturbating in the showers, there's like groping of both adults and also of children and stuff like that. And it's like, I think this type of behavior, surely, wasn't that bad in their own country? Or was it, do you think? It's just that we never heard about it.
I think it is. I've known people who've been to Pakistan and many of these places and to Afghanistan. And there were U.S. soldiers who witnessed boys being chained to the bed of Afghani commanders and tried to intervene and free these sex slaves and were reprimanded for it. So I think you might be a little bit naive as to what goes
right.
on in those countries.
Yep.
But I think your insight is powerful and brilliant that they feel uninhibited when they reach this paradise. Not only do they not have to work to earn an income, but they can behave in this way. And I think one of the things that you're aware of that you didn't mention is that the government protects them from their crimes.
Yes.
In England, these rape gangs, when the parents reported this to the police, it is the parents that were threatened with arrest, not the rape gangs.
That's right.
And the authorities deliberately covered it up. And that gave these Muslims a sense of empowerment and a religious sense of empowerment, because Islam teaches that they have the right to do these things to the infidels. And the government itself is reinforcing that. So it becomes a cascading effect where all of these societal influences justify this perverse behavior. So it increases it.
Yep. Look at Sweden. We had a story coming out a few weeks ago now about how the Swedish police are actually actively covering up if the crimes involve, you know, these, well, supposed refugees, these migrants, these invaders. The code was 291, right? So everyone, or if they discover that the crime involves one of these people that are specially protected, talk about privilege, by the way, who are specially protected within our society if they commit crimes. They name it. They put the 291 code in connection to the crime, and voila, everything disappears and it's swept under the rug and no one can talk about it. To actively prevent people from actually speaking out and discovering what the true nature of many of these people are. I mean, the state and the security in Sweden specifically have openly now said that they basically can't guarantee the safety and security of their own people anymore. This is the government abdicating the right to be in a position of having monopoly violence and enforcing that on people, right? They have effectively broken the contract between people and state, as far as I'm concerned.
But only in terms of the invading force. If a white Swede who has been a Swede for 1,000 generations breaks the law, then the state apparatus is very strong and very powerful and will come down with a heavy hammer on that man.
Absolutely.
What they are is an enemy army. Your government has become an enemy army, imposing this enemy force upon you.
And they're specially protected, The aspect that the Swedish state and the authorities are now worrying about is mobilization of the native Swedish population against this invasion, right? They even we have this famous case in Sweden going back to, I forget exactly when it was, but it was early 1900s, maybe a bit later. There was a demonstration by, you know, a metal ore mine, or whatever you call it. And you had a group there that were protesting the state. It was more of a communist faction within this, right? And what happened is that eventually it became so bad that the military opened fire against these people, and one was killed. Ever since that time, and this took place in a small town up in northern Sweden called Ådalen. So one of the standing kind of phrases that you've heard from the socialist and communist left in Sweden has been, you know, never forget Ådalen, right? It was set as a precedence of why the military should never be deployed against its own people. Fair enough. I understand the point. Despite the fact that you might, you know, have an interest, a government might want to have an interest in protecting itself against a people that is trying to topple it, etc. But nonetheless, it's been there.
That's it. But that's the point, is that the next logical step from that is that the people have a right to revolt and attack the government.
Right.
That's
right.
What the communists were leading up to. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, it's fine. No, you're right. And so what happened is that this law was actually revoked a couple of years ago. I think it's 2 years exact that this was revoked, which means that, again, now the military is allowed to be deployed against its own people. And it's worse than that. The military in Sweden have now actually done active training and drills involving, some so-called of these national, surgeons or a rise of nationalistic sentiments within the country, and how the military should be deployed against those people to take care of that problem. I think the pieces on the chessboard is pretty much lined up and set, and they're just waiting for this to begin to happen, basically. So they know what's going to happen. They know the response. And so the logic follow-up question to all of this is, of course, okay, so are they creating conditions where they're awaiting for a response which can trigger the ultimate purging of some of these few remaining, you know, sources of nationalist sentiments? Or where do you think this is going if this is also occurring in other countries?
That's why I am very concerned about the promotion in the alternative media of Vladimir Putin as the savior of Europe, because he is involved in funding and organizing the groups which are going to revolt against the tyranny that is being imposed upon you. And it is a classic Bolshevik maneuver to set up both forces so they consume one another. And then the Bolshevik armies with its masses of people from China and Russia will have an easy time coming in and taking you over. And even if you're able to defeat this oppression that you face from the Swedish government, and God forbid it ever comes to that, they will then have superior forces to come in, and it is the Swedish government which will invite those forces in to attack you. When you start to see United Nations forces and other things moving into Sweden, you should be especially cautious.
Absolutely. You know, I raised this concern on another show recently, and I still think it's a valid point that, and it's effectively what you're saying here, of course, but this very idea that the conditions within Europe are going to be so bad, and they already are, in fact, that you naturally and understandably and, you know, frankly, absolutely righteous as well, reaction to this, right? So that what happens if Europe cleans up its act, so to speak, and decides to deal with this problem, almost kind of in a way of a larger version of what Germany did after the, you know, Versailles Treaty and the First World War and all this stuff, right? That they took measures to target those that they saw were responsible for the mess and specifically for the utter, you know, degeneracy of what was going on in Berlin at the time, etc. All these things that we've, you know, people can read about. What if that happens on a larger scale in Europe, that we decide to go together, operate together, we organize, we coordinate things, we actually throw out people that we feel have been, that have entered into Europe unlawfully and during a time now of this mass invasion, etc. I mean, you might be right in this regard. What if the internationalists, the rest of the world, with even African populations, Indians, Pakistani, Chinese, Asian, maybe even North America, who knows? I guess that depends on Trump or what as an interesting variable there. But what if they all in unison turn against Europe in the same way that we saw the world turn against Germany during the Second World War?
Well, that's what worries me about this Putin worship, is that they are now celebrating the idea of being anti-Western. That is a buzzword for them. They hate the West. Now, what is the West? We are the West. They are also provoking you to hate and destroy yourselves. So what has to come about is an authentic, not even really an opposition, but simply an authentic European movement that is political in nature and that receives funding from the wealthy class to preserve Europe. And I think the best way to bring that about is to take a page from the Jews' tactics book and to portray yourself in the victimhood in which you are faced, to point out the fact that these people are committing genocide against you, and to point to the authors of this genocide, as you're doing with Kudenhova Kalergi, Georg Nicolai, and Albert Einstein, and all these people who are becoming icons to our people, to point out that this is an organized effort to genocide you. Because the one thing that they have made all these liberals sensitive to is the idea that genocide is evil. So you're going to get their neurons exploding when you start to point out the fact that all the things that these people claim to be defending, they themselves are perpetrating.
Right.
And if you can do that and start to win over some of the wealthy class in Sweden who is now against the Swedish people to be for the Swedish people, I think you have better hopes than latching on to KGB assets of Vladimir Putin. But if it comes down to a fight, you have to fight. You have
right.
to struggle for your survival.
Well, see, this is it. And this is kind of what I'm struggling with, too. Some people raised it as a kind of they thought they made a smart point or something at me that I'm like, ooh, you're walking into a trap with these, you know, Zionist promoted nationalist parties in Europe. And it's like, well, we've talked about that for years as a concern that, yes, there is a in effect, a controlled opposition that's on the rise. But then,
be smarter than them.
Be smarter than them.
Take it over. Take their money and take it over.
Right.
Be smart. Be organized. And be aware of what historical forces are working so that you can smell it. It all has a smell to it. The smell of Zionism and the smell of Bolshevism are very potent odors. And you can utilize them for your benefit. We've got to utilize our supposedly superior North European intellects, and we have to stop utilizing them against ourselves.
Yeah.
And we have to utilize our inborn compassion for humanity in a tribal way so that we become compassionate to our own people and realize that our compassion for ourselves and our own compels action against our enemies.
Absolutely. The ability to organize, cooperate, go together and pull the string, you know, pull in the same direction. And that's also another point that actually worries me, because I see such tremendous bickering and fighting over the smallest little details when people more or less are on the same page in so many different aspects, but they decide to picker, you know.
That's where you smell it, especially if they get you arguing over the meaning of words, like what is a Jew, what is a Zionist, what is a communist, what is the West. Anybody who comes in and wants you to bicker over semantics or parse words is very likely working for your enemies to break apart your organization. And I am not saying what I'm saying about being aware to keep you from acting, to make your actions productive and to ensure that your actions are productive. And I don't think it would be productive to get rid of NATO. It will be productive, highly productive, to get rid of the EU. But I think the communists are trying to drive a wedge in NATO between Greece and Turkey so that they can take over the Middle East and then completely cut off Europe from energy. And what state will Europe be in when it is flooded with Muslims and has no access to cheap energy?
Yeah, there are a lot of variables that are very worrying here, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I think my suggestion to Europeans is, get busy right now, because you are under direct attack and you are being slaughtered and you are losing. And you have to wake people up. And the best way to wake them up is to expose them to the irrefutable facts. They can see what you must see what's happening and see the changes that are taking place. What you have to come to understand is why these changes are taking place and what the ultimate goal of imposing these changes on Europe is. And the ultimate goal of imposing these changes on Europe is to exterminate the indigenous population.
And, you know, I wanted to bring that up earlier. I was heading in that direction, but obviously you mentioned some historical characters that have been involved in promoting this. We've talked about some of them, but, you know, I brought up Wesley Clark, but there's more. In America, you have Noel Ignatieff of MIT. You have, of course, Barbara Spector and Ingrid Lundfors in Sweden. You have Gregory Gysi and Annette Kahane in Germany. There's a slew of these people that are quite openly talking about this from a strategical point of view, that this is the goal, or the fact that, like, we want to end your dominance, we want to end who you are, we want to try to eradicate whiteness and all these kinds of things that they're using. So it's openly.
They make it trendy and fashionable. Just as at the height of the Vietnam War, they made it trendy and fashionable to support communism. Che Guevara and Ho Chi Minh became cult figures in the dissenter class. Now, I am not trying to justify our intervention in Vietnam, but you can see how they turn a people against itself and make the citizens the enemy of the state and the state the enemy of the citizens in order to destroy a society. And I am cautioning people not to fall into that trap. Do not make a hero out of Vladimir Putin. He is another Che Guevara. He is another communist dictator who does not have your best interests at heart. And his political philosopher, Alexander Dugin, is vehemently and viciously anti-Western. And when I say anti-Western, I mean Swedes, Norwegians, Danish, English, German, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, etc., French, etc., etc., etc. They are your enemies, not your saviors.
And you think that is just not part of the rhetoric of the fact that this is modernity? It's what the West represents today in terms of the enforcement of liberalism, political correctness, of military power in other regions that ultimately...
But who are the instigators of all that? Not Western tradition that is the instigator.
No, of course not.
George Washington was vehemently opposed to American interventionalism in foreign wars. It is the Jewish lobby, which overwhelmingly took over our society in the 20th century, and the neoconservative Trotskyite Jews of the same bloody red strain as Vladimir Putin that created these permanent wars and permanent revolutions, all based on Kabbalistic Jewish messianic prophecies to create permanent instability in order to destroy primarily Europe, because Europe destroyed the Jewish temple and sent the Jews into a diaspora. They want to undo what they view as that injustice. And the way that they are going to get back at Europe is to exterminate Europeans. They want to get back at Europe for dismantling the temple in 70 AD and sending the Jews into the diaspora.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up the siege of Jerusalem. That's where it all goes back to, isn't it? There's a lot of things that happens after that point. Just a big mess. Because I was
and before that point, mm-hmm. the Antiochus Epiphanes.
Antiochus, yeah, exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
The fourth slaughtered a pig in the Jewish temple and put in a statue of himself as a god, as did later Caligula, as was the Roman emperor's prerogative and as was normal in the ancient world. He wanted to be worshipped as a god.
And let me add, and look at what the Zionist establishment have done today in the White House, right? I mean, if the White House doesn't represent, if that isn't a temple, if you will, to Western power, right, then what else would be? It's even in Palladian architectural style. There's a lot of, you know, things behind this, but nonetheless, the placement of a menorah on the White House lawn that's being ceremonially lit every year in commemoration of the slaughter of these Greeks, right? That's putting their idol in our temple, if you will, right? It's a counter move. That's how I see it here.
Absolutely. And Disraeli said that, look at the Vatican, where you have a Jew worshipped as God and all of the Roman gods have been destroyed. And it is a form of sympathetic magic to place the menorah in the White House, because that symbol then becomes the reality of Jewish international rule. And that symbol represents the extermination of the Greeks. If you read the Jewish books, the Jewish biblical books of the Maccabees, they are celebrating the complete genocide of Hellenes, killing off of all the Greeks and destroying their Greek culture. And the reason that those Maccabees revolted against the Greeks was the fact that the Jews were starting to view Greek culture as superior to Jewish culture. And the Hellenes were very kind to the Jews and invited them into their society. Now, the Jews saw that kindness as an evil, which was causing the genocide of the Jewish race through assimilation. So they killed not only the Hellenes, but all of the Jews who had assimilated into Hellenistic culture. The Maccabees not only celebrated the genocide of the Greeks, but also the genocide of all of the assimilated Jews who had assimilated into the superior Hellenistic culture.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing in Russia when the Tsar started to welcome in Jews to assimilate. And the Tsar emancipated not only the serfs, but the Jews, and began to break apart the Pale of Settlement and all of the ghettos so that the Jews began to become assimilated. They began to hate the Tsar, and they overthrew the Tsar and destroyed him to end that process of assimilation. That is what the Jews hate the most, is for Jews to be racially integrated into other people, or even to be exposed to the culture of other people. And that is what the menorah celebrates in its highest form, is exterminating other people so that Jews are never exposed to any other genes or any other culture and maintain themselves as Jews. They view that as a form of self-preservation. And they believe that the only ultimate form of self-preservation is to exterminate all Gentiles.
The punishment is because of the kindness, that those that actually let them in are those that they, well, at least first turn on.
Those
right?
are their worst enemies.
Yeah.
People who are kind to Jews are their worst enemies. And that's why Christian Zionists ought to be very wary, because they are ultimately hoping to convert Jews to Christianity, and they are helping and empowering the Jews to reach such a powerful force that they will then be able to exterminate the Christian Zionists. And they have the Christian Zionist churches all under their control. They are completely dominated by people with close ties to the Israeli establishment, and they are funded by them, and they have been made famous by them, and they have been schooled by them. And many of many of the books that they read have been published by these Zionist Jews or people working for these Zionist Jews. And the Jews hate most those who are kind to them because that kindness invites in mixture. And the Jews have many laws to prevent the mixture of Jews with non-Jews. They will not eat at the same table with non-Jews. They will not allow any religious doctrines, and for thousands of years, not even scientific doctrines, to enter into their synagogues, which are schools. They do not want the Jews to lose anything Jewish about themselves. And their ultimate goal is to exterminate everyone else in order to preserve themselves.
Now, is this primarily true for the most vehemently religious Jews? Or what about the liberals, right? And those behind Reform Judaism, etc.? Do they ultimately agree with a lot of the things you've been talking about here, do you think? Or is there a schism within the group?
The modern liberal Jew is a product of what happened when Shabbatai Tzevi became the Messiah of the Jews and said that the Jews now have to take Palestine. And they created the sect of Hasidic Jews. And the counterbalance to the Hasidic Jews was the Reform Jews of Moses Mendelssohn. But those Jews were sent in to Western civilization to subvert it from within. And there was a precedent for that. When the Jews were persecuted in Spain, there was a famous letter written that said that the Jews should enter into all the professions. They should enter into the courts so that they could poison the kings. They should become doctors so that they could kill any Gentiles who were their enemies. They should become teachers so that they could subvert the educational process of Gentiles and make them enemies of themselves and subvert their own interests for the benefit of the Jews. And there was a long list in this letter of what the Jews should do, and that's what they've done. And Moses Mendelssohn facilitated that by creating Reform Judaism, which then allowed Jews to enter into Christian universities by either faking to be Christians in those countries which prohibited Jews from entering the universities, and in for more liberal states, simply entering into the universities as Reform Jews and being able to sit next to Gentiles and eat with Gentiles in Gentile cafeterias. That was a necessary process for them to infiltrate Gentile society, and that's how the modern liberal Jew was formed. And then the modern liberal Jew came in and took over the mass media to promote all kinds of self-destructive ideas among Gentiles.
Give us the name of the letter again. I missed that.
Oh, it was sent from a chief rabbi to someone in Spain, to the Jews of Spain who were complaining about it. It's contained in a book called Waters Flowing Eastward.
Right, yeah.
Which republishes the protocols, but it also has that letter in it. And I can't remember the specific, I think it was a letter to the rabbi of Toledo or something like that.
Also, it's way, way back then, huh? Because that's, I've brought that up too in many shows, but it's a very interesting history of what happened to the Visigoths and to the what later became the Spanish kingdom. How the cooperation took place with the Muslim invaders, how the gates to many of these cities were opened, etc., and how they actually quite openly brag about that today, right? That this was a great thing. These evil Visigoths tried to have them convert and abide by the same rules as everybody to convert to Catholicism or convert to a kind of new Christianity, right? So that was seen, as far as I understood it, as such an offense to the fact that they couldn't remain who they were, so they wanted to like destroy everything they had built as a kind of a punishment for even suggesting this idea, right?
That's why they had to flee Spain. That's why they sent the Jew Christopher Columbus to America to create the New Jerusalem. The Spanish were becoming very open to Jews and allowing Jews to assimilate. And whenever that happens in a society, the Jewish elders sponsor what they claim is anti-Semitism to expel the Jews so that they no longer assimilate and lose their Jewishness. And King Ferdinand's father was a Jew. And it was the Ottoman Empire who welcomed them in. And somebody from Nasi, I forget his name, set up the Ottoman Empire and ingratiated himself to the Sultan by giving him large sums of money, and then invited in the Jews from Spain into the Ottoman Empire, where they then used the Ottoman Empire as a weapon against the Europeans.
So do you think this all goes back to the destruction of the temple in 70, or because, you know, researchers
much before that, all of their books, right. Mm-hmm. If you read the Old Testament, state that the messianic mission of the Jews is to exterminate the Gentiles and create world rule from Jerusalem and messianic peace for 2,000 years. And they break down the ages of the universe into 2,000-year periods. And they say that the foundation of man with Adam was a 2,000-year period. And then Moses on was a 2,000-year period. And now Christianity is a 2,000-year period. And that each one of those 2,000-year periods adds up to 6,000 years. And we are now entering the seventh day, the Sabbath day, the 7,000-year millennium, which they say will be the messianic 1,000 years of peace. And in order for that to be obtained, the Gentiles have to be exterminated and the Jewish king has to rule from Jerusalem. And it's all in the Old Testament for people to read. Just as usury. Usury is stated 3 times in Deuteronomy that they should utilize usury to take over all the nations and become the rulers of the earth, the head and not the tail. They cannot practice usury against fellow Jews, but they must, they are compelled by God to practice it against Gentiles as a means of taking over the world. This is not something out of the protocols. This is something out of the books of Moses.
Yeah, I think, isn't it... You spoke about the time and the calendar and all that stuff. I think it's the Freemasonic calendar, Anna Lucius, right? The year of light is...
Yes, that's very significant because right. The year 2000 in that is the beginning of the Messianic Age.
6016, I think it is today, according to that calendar.
Absolutely. And that is the calendar of Kabbalah and the calendar of Shabbatai Tsevi. That's how it got introduced to the Freemasons. That is the official calendar. The majority of Jewry is working off of an unofficial calendar, which the Jews in the know realize. And they think that the reason why this is being delayed is because they have not yet created enough turmoil in the world, which is why they created Freemasonry to introduce that turmoil. And that's what you're about to face in Europe.
Interesting. So it's a big Jewish conspiracy, isn't it? Two people out.
It has been for 2,500 years, and right. It's not hidden. It's not hidden. Mm. All you have to do is read the Old Testament as if it's not the word of God, but the word of the Jews, and there it is. It's not a conspiracy. It's a plan. They call it a prophecy, but because there are not supernatural forces to bring it about, they're bringing it about themselves.
Right, exactly. They're manifesting this. Yeah, because I try to find a little bit in terms of what the, you know, what the beef really is about, right? Kevin McDonald speaks about group evolutionary strategy. There's different, you know, ideas here, but it's always interesting to try to figure out what is the motivating factor and stuff. But you think it's just religious in nature, that this is this is a commandment of sorts that was given and they are trying to enforce that. Is that right?
But we have to understand religion as they understand religion, not as we as Europeans understand religion. Religion to the Jew is law and kingdom and war and genocide. When you read the Old Testament, it is not some metaphysical exploration of how the universe was created through whatever forces. That's a very, very small part of it. There's almost no metaphysics and no religion in the Old Testament. It is all about a jealous, angry God. And remember what I said before about as above, so below. Just as the Jewish God has to kill off all non-Jewish gods, Jews have to kill off all other human beings. As above, so below. And the Old Testament specifies that there will be a new heavens and a new earth. And by that, they mean a heavens in which only their God reigns and an earth in which only Jews reign. And ultimately, the only way for Jews to reign absolutely is to exterminate all non-Jews. And it's very clear again and again in the Old Testament, it is genocide after genocide. They were never the native inhabitants of Palestine. And the only way they could come to rule Palestine was to exterminate all of the indigenous peoples so that they could never, ever again in the future try to reformulate and retake the territories that they held.
Do you have you outlined, if you will, some of this chronology that we've been talking about in one of your books?
Yes. You'll find that in my book on Maleva Einstein, I talk a little bit about that. I talk more about it in Albert Einstein, The Incorrigible Racist, and in a PDF I have available online called The Manufacture and Sale of Sane Einstein, I lay it out in even further detail. And in many of my blogs, I have many series of blogs that talk about the universal enslavement of the non-Jew and many of the issues we're discussing.
Now, I feel always obligated to, to ask in terms of how you view this aspect that every single Jewish person is in on this more or less in some way, which I don't think is the case personally. What do you stand on this?
No, and I know that they're not because I can see the shock in their face when I say some of these things, but it is the Jewish people and the tradition of the Jewish people as a collective. This is their history, their tradition, and their mission. And even those who call themselves communists are pursuing Jewish messianic goals, whether they view it as being religious or whether they view it as being political, liberal, and philanthropic. Is irrelevant. They are destroying us and making themselves enemies by aspiring to these things which are engineered to kill us off. So we have to view what they're doing as an enemy pursuit, and we don't have to sort all that out. What we have to do is survive. And in order to survive, we're going to have to confront this enemy.
Yeah.
We don't have to be these great liberal philosophers that try to figure out what's in the mind of every single Jew. What we have to do is figure out how we're going to organize to preserve ourselves, the enemies that we confront, and how to shut those enemies down. We have to stop utilizing the alternative media as trying to sort out good Jews from bad Jews. That's not the issue. The issue is how are we going to survive this attack on us?
Well, if we are under attack, we have to defend ourselves. And it doesn't matter if we wish it was or wasn't so. I think if someone has declared themselves my people and all that as enemies, then, you know, you have to deal with that situation, right? And you have to defend yourself and make sure to protect yourself against that. Because look at the end result at the end of the day too, though, Christopher, of what we're seeing right now, that we are witnessing the utter breakdown of the European nations. And we also have in unison with that people that are openly talking and writing about this and how they're trying to sell us the idea of how wonderful this is. So it is observably a reality. This is what's happening.
And almost every one of them is a Jew. I saw Larry King on CNN years ago promoting Obama as being this great figure because he was of mixed race and how wonderful it would be when everyone is of mixed race. And what do they say is the benefit of this mixing of the races? Peace. Now, that goes right back to their messianic prophecies that the messianic era is to be an age of peace. And how do they get people to clamor for peace? They get people to clamor for peace by promoting and instigating war and more horrific and genocidal wars so that everyone will submit to the destruction of their own nations and their own race in the interests of finally obtaining peace. And they will ensure that that peace never comes about because for them, peace is the extermination of Gentiles. So there will be no peace. They will pit us down to the last man against the last man so that we fight each other to the death and that they remain the last people standing. That is the agenda, and it is clearly stated in the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, it says we will bring brother against brother, and that they will use Esau as their sword, and as their soldier, and as their slave. Now, to the Jews, the twin brothers Jacob and Esau signify the Jews and the Gentiles.
Right, yeah. Well, Christopher, we could obviously go on and on here for probably another hour at least, you know. Let's let our audience ponder on some of the things we've been talking about here and let them digest this a bit. It's a lot to, I mean, we do speak, you know, on this topic now and then as well. So it's not all new, but you've put some new thoughts, I think, into our minds in terms of connecting some of the dots, basically historically, and tying that into, interestingly enough, also the context of science, which is a new angle, really. So why don't we do this? Let's talk a bit more about some of the books, so people know where to go if they want to try to read some more of this for themselves, and, you know, check out your work, check your sources, and try to, you know, in one way or another, confirm this for themselves, right? So they can validate this. So give us some of the details again, where people can go to read more.
I have links to my books on my website, jewishracism.blogspot.com, and Jewish racism is spelled out as if it were one word. Probably the best way to get directly to my books is to go to amazon.com and put in my name, Christopher John, J-O-N, Bjerknes, B-J-E-R-K-N-E-S.
All right. Very good. Well, I think this is, as I said, very interesting. I'd love to have you back, you know, in future shows here and talk a bit more about this, and also actually go into a little bit more detail on your book on the Jewish genocide of Armenian Christians. I think that's a topic that we haven't really spoken enough about, and it's very interesting what you alluded to also, of course, in terms of the Young Turks and the history there. There's a lot to go over there, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I welcome the opportunity anytime. And thank you very much. I very much enjoyed it, and it was a wonderful interview.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you absolutely. You too. Thank you. It was great having you here. As I said, I've wanted to have you on for some time. Is there any, I mean, we can have you back. We can let, as I said, let people, you know, mull on this for a little bit. But and at a later time, I think we can have you back and talk a bit about some of the things that you suggest people do, etc. But is there any, I guess, closing words that you'd like to leave us with here before we wrap up?
Yes. If you find what I am saying shocking, see if it is as shocking as what you see happening to your nations. Does it not shock you more that your children are now in schools with people from other countries who are subverting your culture, subverting your language, bringing in their foreign diseases, and attacking your children, bullying your children in their own homeland? Would your ancestors have tolerated that? And stop hating your ancestors. Become more like your ancestors. Preserve yourself. The only reason you exist is because your ancestors fought this in the past. And if you want to have descendants, if you want to have grandchildren who look like you and who look like your ancestors and think like you and occupy the lands that your ancestors claimed, then you have to stand up as they did and defend yourselves.
Well said. Good job. Thank you so much, Christopher, for doing the work you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I hope you learned from today's program. Thank you so much for listening. We have much more coming in the week ahead, so please stay tuned. A special thanks to all our members for your continued support and for being there for us. We have some updates planned for the websites. We're going to do the members' website right after an update on redicecreations.com and give some even more enticing and hopefully enjoyable additions as well to all our wonderful members. Have a great rest of your day wherever you are, and we will speak more soon. Thank you again, and my thanks to the team. Take care.